Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, first one, this might be a contentious one. My 14-year-old daughter has fallen in with a bad group of friends and we're worried. She found the transition to secondary school hard. She was isolated and unhappy in first year and it took her a long while to find a group of friends who accepted her. And now in second year, she's hanging around with a group of girls who are on the fringes in the school. They don't seem to have high expectations of themselves, and I fear this is rubbing off on my daughter. For example, my daughter used to be academic and like her study, and now she's showing less interest and even questioning the point of it. She used to be very sporty and has sort of drifted out of that, mostly because these girls think sport is stupid. The new friends just want to hang out in the green at the shopping centre and be on their phones after school. She's also become quite bitchy and nasty in her comments to myself and her dad and her little sister. If my husband or I try to talk to her about this, it usually flares up into an argument. She says we're snobs and haven't got a clue, especially if we say anything even remotely critical of our friends. She has also become much more argumentative recently. I am aware some of this is hormonal, but a lot of the change has come about since she started being pals with this group of girls. Any advice?
Tread carefully here, because I would caution around that kind of causation. It's the group of friends versus a correlation. It's all happening around the time she finds herself friends, because so much of what's in this letter is typical teenage behaviour.
Yeah.
You know, and I also think when it comes to your, especially your teenagers' friends, I would always think, Sean, it's better to observe and monitor long before you jump in with your "they're a bad influence on you, it's these friends" kind of stuff. Because if you demonize or forbid or ban a friendship, it can actually make that friendship more appealing. We all know that anyway. But I would think the better approach with her is to focus in more of a reflective, curious way how her friends make her feel. How do you feel when you're with your friends? What is it you like about your friends? You know, because then you're helping her to go, well, how do I feel? Do I feel good when I'm with them? It's better that you're supporting her in that reflective process than you are telling her you've a bad attitude and it's because your friends are bad and we've decided that for you. That's going to drive a division between you. I just think through adolescence, it's very easy for those doors of communication to slam shut. The task is to keep them open. Even slightly ajar will do.
Yeah.
You know, just so she knows she can come to you. And there's something in this letter about describing this group of girls who are on the fringes. But this family's daughter was on the fringes. She didn't have friends.
Yeah.
She spent first year with nobody to connect with and looking to be accepted by others. This group said, yes, you're welcome to hang with us. I would see that as a positive for them. You know, other kids were a bit closed off and that was hard for her. So I think hold in mind that there's something about this group's social position that resonates with your daughter. Like, she has found a fit here and she's like, I have friends, I can go to school, I have people to hang out with, which is so important. And again, you know, if she's lost interest in her academic pursuits, she's only just finished second year. Like, I don't know, do kids have academic pursuits in primary school?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think we have a real picture of that. I just think so much of that is typical teenage stuff. Yes, you're going to have to put some structure around, look, your homework has to be done, whatever revision has to be done. Then by all means, go hang out with your friends. Of course, you would do that no matter who her friends are.
Yeah.
And I guarantee this would be an issue, no matter who her friends would be in that way. I think get to know the friends. I remember growing up, my family home, the door was always open, largely because the key was always in it. But anybody could come in. And we always knew, and our friends knew, friends are always welcome here. Even if my parents didn't know them very well, it was a way of, well, let me keep eyes on you all.
Yeah,
let me get to know these kids I don't know. Let's just see how you're hearing things as you walk in and out of rooms. I think that's a great way to approach this. You know, try to get to know her friends, you don't invite them over. Tell her to invite her friends over. Order some pizzas. Tell them they're welcome. Put a cutoff time on it and let them go. I think that's the way to keep her close and to get to know these kids. And there may be a lot more to these kids than you realise.
Yeah. The thing about, because, you know, the phrase has been around for God knows decades, the bad influence.
I know.
Is it a real thing? Does it actually happen?
I think influence is always there. I think as parents, we have to really work hard to stay influential in our own kids' lives. Mm. That, you know, she's developmentally at a stage where she's absolutely pulling away from parents. The you haven't got a clue. You don't get it. That's a script all yeah. teenagers have. And largely they're right. I do want to give it to them, you know. We don't know it all. We won't always get it. But you can respond instead of getting defensive with, help me better understand. You're right, I don't understand all of this, but I'm definitely curious to better understand it. And I think you can, whether you can say, all of the things that my child is doing is the fault of these friends. No, I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
Because they are not the only influence in your child's life. You have to trust in everything you've put in there is still in there for her. She may be in that process of estrangement whereby a teenager is experimenting with new friends, new music, new style, new makeup, new tastes, all of that stuff to say, I am nothing like you.
Mm.
You bunch of snobs who haven't got a clue, I'm nothing like you.
Yeah.
So it could absolutely be a developmental piece. And that's why you don't want to get like demonize her, isolate her. You want to say, well, look, if these are your friends and you feel good with them and they make you feel good about yourself, I'm happy to hear it. They are always welcome here. Please invite your friends over.
Mm. By the same token, as you know, as the thing said, she had a bit of a struggle fitting in.
Yeah.
So when she did find friends, it'd be reasonable to think she'll
adopt some traits.
Yes.
Yes, 100%.
The cultural norms in that group, like, right, I don't like sport anymore.
Yeah. And, now, also, we know statistically 14 years old is peak age for girls to drop out of sports. So, again, there's nothing in here that couldn't also be explained developmentally.
Yeah.
I'm not saying... when you add it all together, Sean, there could be, you know, okay, look, there could be a breadcrumb trail that leads us to say these are not the friends you would choose for your daughter, but they are the friends she has chosen.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you want to align with her. You've got to stay relevant in your teenagers' lives. And I think the way to do that is be interested in what interests them.
My husband and I are very happily married. It's an odd one to start with that one. My husband and I are very happily married and make a good team, except when it comes to our parenting. I think even if we disagree on something for the kids, we need to show a united front and stick with one another. For example, I don't think my daughter should be automatically allowed a phone just because she's going into secondary school in September. Her dad thinks this is unfair and she will be othered or left behind and we should give in. I also don't agree my son should be allowed to quit piano just because he was bored with it. I think he should keep it up at least for another year. My husband thinks it's pointless and unfair making him keep it up if it doesn't give him joy. So when the kids come to us, about this, he says it's your mother who thinks you should keep up your lessons, or I would let you have a phone, but your mother won't allow it. It almost feels like he agrees with me making the hard decisions and he's more keen to be liked, or perhaps he's just softer than me and I'm too strict. But I find it so frustrating because I'm always the baddie. I've asked him to show a more united front and he said that he would not be being honest with the kids if I just want us to agree why I can't take his side. But I really, if my views are better, plus there are recent examples, we don't always agree on parenting stuff. But lately we do more often than not. The children are starting to pit us against each other. Please help.
Ah, yeah. So, I mean, it's lovely to be the good cop, but in order to be the good cop, you do need someone else to be the bad cop.
Yeah.
You can only be good in comparison. So this is not working. And this will not work. I don't think they've given us the age of these kids. I don't know that it matters a whole lot.
Well, one presumably is 12, 13.
Oh, yeah, going into secondary. Yes, yes, you're right. I mean, I've said this before. Whether or not they get a phone going to school is definitely a family and parental choice. It's very much dependent on who and how that child is. I'm not a fan of introducing something brand new at a time of transition and change, no matter what that is. And transitioning from primary into secondary school and all of the demands of a longer school day with multiple mini transitions going on during it, that takes time for kids to adjust to. I don't know if that's the best time to also be handling the responsibility of a phone and the list of rules they'll definitely have given her about managing it, because that's what we all do. Here's all the rules so we can feel that we've done everything we can about handing it over. So if you're asking me to weigh in on this and cause, I'll be bad cop, you know, and say, I think there's enough reason not to delay it. I'm not saying don't give it to her at all in first year.
Yeah.
But to delay it right now, I don't think you have to have it in her hand by September. If you are doing that, you'd want to be prepping now.
Yeah.
You don't just hand her the phone and say, now we're going to talk about the rules. You've got to get kids ready for this, you know, certainly in advance of handing it over. Other than that, though, I do think children thrive within calm, clear, consistent, predictable parental boundaries, limits. It's their job to test those limits. Oh, but oh, I'm going to ask mom. That's absolutely their job. It is our job that they see us as a united front.
Yeah.
Even and especially when we're not.
Mm.
Because we can deal with that in private. Mm. And that's what this couple do need to do. You have to develop a signal. It could be nonverbal or verbal. Try, if it's verbal, keep it soft now. Don't be like, oi, I don't agree with that. Mm. Something a bit more subtle that says, I'm not on board. And we're going to need to talk that through.
Mm.
Okay. And then later, you're talking it through, but that involves a whole lot of listening. Because in really talking something through where you don't agree, you have to entertain and be open-minded that there is another perspective other than your own that's coexisting alongside yours. And it doesn't mean you're right and they're wrong or vice versa, but you have to hear that out. Where are you coming from? What's your thinking, your reasoning? What are your worries? What are your hopes? Like, what do you want from this? And try to reach a middle ground that involves compromise on both parts.
Mm.
And then it is, we believe, we think, we are suggesting, we are telling when you go back to the children. That's how it really has to happen. So you're going to listen and talk to each other uninterrupted. I don't want to be like hand each other a talking stick, but not a million miles from that either. You know, really be respectful of that. You're going to have your parental essentials and you're going to have your parental preferences. Preferences are where you can negotiate.
Mm.
So essentials are generally, I can't move on this. And it's because I think, I believe, I fear. Okay. A preference is, I just would prefer this, but I'm open to another perspective on it. I do think at the moment, it's easy to say he's making you the bad cop, but you're also playing into that role. There's two of you in it. You're having to take on the disciplinarian role. You're having to take that on. But you could say, well, what did your dad say? Hang on a second, Dad and I need to talk about that. I think kids can hear that from us. You know, when your kids come and say, well, Dad said that he would say yes, but you would say no, and say, well, that sounds like Dad and I need to talk about it first because we're not on the same page. Mm. So let Dad and I have that conversation and then we'll come back to you.
As a minimum, isn't that something they could agree that if there's a big request like that, 100%. That they can both of them say, I'll get back to you. Me and Mom stroke Dad are going to have a chat.
Absolutely.
About this.
Yeah. These kids sound like they're bang on age for pester power.
Yeah.
That is what they're supposed to do. But I do think it's important children know that we talk about things, that it's not just a whimsical knee-jerk response we give, that we do consider those things and we have to work to get on the same page and that you're going to talk it through. The same with the piano. I mean, there's lots of people who are going to be listening to the show and who will wish they had listened to their parents and kept up the piano when they gave it up. I think, you know, you're paying for it. If you've paid for a term of piano, yeah, I'm with you. He sees that out. Okay, that's my rule. If I've paid for it, you're seeing it out unless there's an exceptional reason not to do it. But if he's not, if you're paying for lessons and he's not going to practice and he's going to whinge and moan about doing it, you've got to weigh up, would your money be better placed elsewhere for him?
Mm. Also, the dad's explanation for this.
Oh, yeah, no.
About being honest with the kids.
Yeah, stop. No.
Yeah, that's just such a cop-out.
Absolutely.
And if we were to be completely honest with children, especially as they go into their later teenage years, how honest are we going to be?
I will never be out of work is what I'm hearing.
That's, you know.
No, it doesn't work like that. And it's really about being respectful.
Mm.
And how you are respectful to those children is that you respect each other and you hold boundaries and you're okay to say, I don't know what the right answer is. We need to have a chat and we will come back to you. Then you're being respectful. That's much more important.
Please tell me I'm not the only one who's now dreading the school holidays. My kids are in camps for almost half the summer. They wanted that. They are 9 and 11 and booked up for all sorts, which is expensive, but it's what they want. But I know on the days they're not in camp, they will want to know what we are doing and where we are going. We are away in Kerry in a rental house for 5 days at the end of August, but can't afford a foreign trip this year. When I suggest they play outside or bring their friends around or play board games, etc., they complain and tell me all their pals are doing day trips, going away abroad, centre parks, etc. We had the same during the Easter break and both midterms. We can't afford to keep paying for trips and events, especially as my husband hours have been cut. But two, I don't want them to grow up entitled and always having to be entertained. They just roll their eyes when we suggest things we used to do growing up. Equally, I do feel guilty because we both work, albeit I only work part-time, so wonder if I should be doing more with or for them. I'm very strict on phone and tablet use. It's the only thing I think I do right as a parent. But often they try to get around that if we aren't going or doing. Any ideas for getting them to accept boredom, downtime, or lean into their imagination a bit more? The constant need to do things and constant comparison to what their friends are at is driving me mad. I don't want them to be spoiled.
I think that's such a relatable letter.
Oh,
isn't
Jesus,
it?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I was nodding going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole, all of our friends are doing day trips in Central Park.
Stop.
That's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, immediately you could say that's not true. That's the whole, everyone else is doing it. Yeah. We are the only
everyone
ones.
Everyone else has a phone except
me. Exactly. But these kids are slap bang in middle childhood, okay? 9 and 11 years old. So outside influence of peers, stories to tell the peers, what we're up to, all of that. What are my friends doing? Pester power. That's what's dominating. So it's really, and it is really hard, but it's really important that as parents then we hold those boundaries a little bit tighter. The other thing, I mean, you've suggested bring friends around, play board games, play outside. You're already doing a huge amount to entertain these kids and working very hard. I think it's not just okay for children to, and all of us, if I'm honest, to be bored. I think it's essential.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, boredom is where we get that kind of free-floating state of daydreaming and ideas and thoughts and reflections. It gives your brain a break. It's out of boredom will come ideas and desire and curiosity. So like this parent is saying, how do I get them to be bored and lean into their imagination?
Or to accept it, yeah.
You let them be bored.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. So when they're like, we're bored, just go, how exciting. I can't wait to hear what you come up with.
Yeah.
It's not my job to go in there and juggle and entertain. And like, kids have so much stuff that they know they can do. So I think they need to have that. If they keep coming to you with bored, say, look, I have, and what you could do playfully, creatively with this is get like a mason jar, just a jam jar is fine, and put a whole list of random household chores on scraps of paper and fold them up. And put a label on it, the I'm bored jar.
Mm.
So if they come to you, you are going to offer them a lucky dip into that jar and they can do what's on the paper, or they could go and find something to do themselves.
Mm.
And that's how you're going to manage this and not get pulled into it. I don't think, and I hate it when I hear that parents are feeling they have to explain not going on fancy holidays or do, like, that's not something we have to explain. Those are treats. Those are things you save and work up towards and have. They're not entitlements. They're not standard experiences. So I do think it's okay to say that's not what we will be doing. And you don't need to explain or apologize for that. You're offering your kids so much. They wanted to do camps. You're doing it. Camps are expensive.
God, yeah.
Especially when you're doing multiples of them.
Yeah.
For two children. So that's what you've put your money into and that's what you've offered them for the summer. I feel for kids as well, Sean, because like the summer is long. Like it already feels long, you know, but it is long. And, you know, they're used to quite a high level of structure and stimulus between school and after school activities. Like kids' lives are very structured and ordered. Mm. A lot of kids are extremely stimulated from being busy and occupied and driven from one thing to another. I do understand that when it comes to so-called downtime, they're like, what's that? Mm. I don't get that all year.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
But to reframe it as an opportunity to reconnect, to find toys, even ask them to find three things they could donate to a charity shop or to somebody else, or no, once all the bits are in it, also enables them to reconnect with toys that they'd forgotten they have, including board games. You know, if they're bored with board games, ask them to go through all the boxes, see which is missing pieces and put them in a pile that you're going to get rid of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like they can be occupied and not necessarily entertained by you. I just hear a parent under huge pressure here who's already doing so much. Those kids are fine.
Yeah. Also as well, they're 9 and 11, so there isn't a massive age gap. So
no, they
would
can play
be
together.
They can play together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as someone says, as texting to say, we need to make boredom great again.
I agree entirely. Yeah. But I think that's true of us adults as well. I think the constant scrolling distraction in our pocket, none of us are great at being bored. And it's really, really important for creativity, curiosity and good mental health, to be honest.
My 8-year-old can get into a panic when I leave the house. When I announce I'm going somewhere, he will start getting agitated and say he needs me. We reassure him that he will be looked after by his dad, who he gets on great with, but he still panics. Last week, when I had to go out, he had a full-blown panic. He was clinging onto my leg and Dad had to hold him so I could go. It was really upsetting for everyone, but I had a meeting I couldn't miss and I think it really set him back. Now I avoid going out, but this isn't not going to work as a solution, isn't a solution long term. It's particularly bad in the evening, and then he can't tolerate me going out at all. However, when I do stay in the evening, he's not that interested in me. He might be happy playing with his brothers or the dog or even his dad, paying no attention to me at all. But if I get up to go out, he becomes upset again. We have tried telling him in advance when I leave, but that seems to make him anxious all day. We did have trouble getting him into school last year because of this anxiety, but this settled a bit near the end of the school year. What helped him was keeping everything the same and predictable in the school routine. It had to be me taking him and collecting him. He worries if we switch to Dad.
Yeah. So there's quite a bit, and this sounds like it's not a all of a sudden this has happened.
No, it sounds like
it's there. Yeah. And he may well be a sensitive little guy who just feels things at an amplified, you know, that over and above too much level when he's feeling it. It's because lots of kids don't like when parents go out. You know, they're not that happy for us actually at all. But some kids really, really struggle with it. And this kid is. And that little bit about, you know, even when I do stay in, he's not actually interested in me. It's not about that. It's about knowing where you are. And the fact that you're not out means I'm relaxed and reassured. And I don't need to look at you. I'm actually quite happy doing my own thing, so long as I know you're right there.
Yeah.
And that's really bringing up questions around separation anxiety for me, that it is that point of separation, the going into school. And the only thing that worked was actually quite a rigid ritual. It must be you. There's no variance. This is how it's going to be. Step one, step two, step three, because it affords anxious kids a semblance of control. I can anticipate with a degree of certainty, this is what we'll do. Then we'll go here. Then this. Okay, I can talk myself through it. And you can almost hear that inner monologue in that. But there's an absence of flexibility or adaptability. And that's life.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's trying to be difficult. This is very much a kid in difficulty. So I would, especially ahead of the school year, and again, you trying to anticipate a couple of things. First of all, I would not avoid going out. I'd be mindful about it and I know it's going to be stressful, but it ultimately is good for children to see their parents go and return, go and return.
Yeah,
it's really good for permanence. But I would be, you know, I don't mean to throw caution to the wind, go out every night of the week, but it is okay to say, I'm going for a walk. I'm going to meet a friend. I will be back. And I think that's really important. Often when we talk about separating from our kids, and I mean just saying goodbye, we're saying, I'm going to the shop, I'm going here. It's really important you add in, and I will be back at bedtime, after bedtime, you'll be asleep, but I will be back. And when I come back, I'm going to put a kiss on your forehead like I do every night, whatever it is. Also naming who will be with you when I'm not, because we tend to, you know, again, I see this at school gates as well, that reassurance, you go in and I'll see you later. But we don't emphasize who will you be with when you're not with me.
Yeah.
So you're naming, your dad's here, the dog's here, the brothers are here, you've got a game on the go, you could do this and that. A little bit opposite to what we were just saying, giving nudges and suggestions, because you're reminding about the familiarity and the structure that is at home, even without you. So doing all of that, I would still say that I'd consider referring him for some play-based therapy.
Yeah.
I would, because there's something more to this. It went on most of the school year. It was managed in a very rigid way. You could be looking into another year with this. He's 8 years old. You're finding it difficult to get out at all. You're starting to avoid it. I think all of you will benefit from just meeting with someone to talk it through. It doesn't mean there's any one thing with this sometimes.
Yeah,
and I think that can be really difficult, Sean, for parents who are like, but what caused it? Where did it come from? There may not be one thing. He may be just that kid who struggles with that point of separation at a way that is over and above, and he's not managing it, and he needs a little bit of help and support with working through his feelings around that. I think it would be well worth it. We've said it here before, play therapy is, you're often looking at a wait list, depending on where you are in the country. Ask for somebody who's certified and qualified and get on a wait list.
Yeah. Okay, one last quick one. I would really appreciate your help. My 15-year-old daughter is obsessed with fake tan. She insists on putting on layers of really dark tan and looks basically dirty. Her pals are all the very same. They won't go near their faces and haven't an iota on how to blend it, so they look ridiculous. I've agreed to let her wear one layer of medium brown and helped her put it on, but she says she feels like a ghost and that I look like one with my tan on. It's all over the sheets and causes so many rows. Last week she went up and put three layers on after I specifically told her not to. I was so cross. I confiscated her phone for a day and a night and that caused an even bigger row. Any advice, please?
Oh, the rupture is all over the place. Yeah. So make sure you're doing a repair with her. Oh, Sean, I think every single generation has this. Like, I remember, you know, when it was pan stick all over your face but stopping abruptly at your jawline and rubbing it over your lips so that your lips blended into your face. And of course, parents would have been looking going, what are they doing? That looks hideous. But that was the trend. That was what everyone else was doing. And she is at an age when her priority is fit in with my peer group. Try not to critique how she's looking and how she's dressing. I just think teenage girls are already under immense pressure, body image wise and self-esteem and how they're feeling about themselves. I think, look, at you're doing some of the basics here are actually already good. It's just more a tweak than changing. How about that you offer to help her apply a generous layer of dark tan, because this is one layer of medium tan. It's not cutting the mustard for her, okay? Yeah. And then you teach her about exfoliating and moisturizing and blending, and you use it while you're doing it. Buy her a tan blending brush or whatever. I clearly don't wear tan by the sounds of me. I'm very pale.
I sound really knowledgeable, didn't I?
Yeah. When you're doing that. Teenage girls have a tough time, okay, trying to feel good about themselves. So they need support. They need validation, not ridiculing. And it might be time to empower this 15-year-old in how to use the washing machine so that she is responsible for washing her sheets, her towels and her clothes. She's 15. That's not a big ask. And I think that's about, look, this is what makes me annoyed and frustrated. I don't want to be annoyed with you. The answer is you wash your own sheets and then we're not bickering about tan anymore.
There are bigger fights
in the world. I would not be fighting over this. Just support her.
Get her to sleep in plastic sheets.
Is another option.
Is another option. Somebody's texting to say, if the children are bored, can't they go to Mass or do a couple of decades of the Rosary? Brilliant answer. Thanks, Tom, for sending that in. Joanna.
That is a niche offering.
That's a niche offering. Thanks a million, as usual.
Thank you.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.